It's going to be super simple and super practical because, again, I've been surfing in an inch of water of sewer water for the last 72 hours. So this morning is going to be very, very straightforward, especially going into the Fed announcement on Wednesday that is like people are thinking, hey, man, this could be really crazy. I mean, you've got your SVBs, you've got your Credit Suisses. I mean, everybody's going down like dominoes. So it's like, man, what's the Fed going to do? How's the market going to react? All that kind of stuff. So let's talk about managing outlier risk. Are you guys ready? Super simple, very succinct, extremely practical this morning. Are you ready to go?
Do it.
Let's go, man. All right. So John, cue us up on the intro slide. As premium sellers, we are always most exposed to big outlier moves. To some degree, these are unavoidable and simply represent a cost of doing business in the selling options world. But just because these black swans can't be eliminated doesn't mean that they can't be minimized. Now, one thing I think is important to understand right here is if you're going to engage in the marketplace, you have to take risks somewhere. Like you have to. You have to choose, right, where you want your gotchas to be. Now, the great thing about obviously, you know, being an active trader is you get to choose those gotchas. You don't have to just accept, you know, default long, dollar cost averaging, you know, just hoping the bottom doesn't fall out type of situation. You don't have to accept that risk if you don't want to accept that risk. You can shift your risk to something else. But it's important to understand that no matter what you do, there's going to be risk somewhere. You're going to have to absorb the gotchas in some space. Like there's no strategy or system or methodology that's completely, you know, immune from some type of risk. I think we can all agree with that. Would you guys say that's fair?
Sure.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, of course, that's pretty obvious. So, okay. So to set the stage this morning in managing outlier risk, let's kind of offer up a few descriptive statistics. Now, again, I wasn't able to devote the time that I normally do to the Monday morning segment, given the main sewer line backup. So I actually pulled off some slides. I've used these a couple of years before, but I think it's really relevant for us, what we're talking about here this morning. So John, hit us on the next slide. So here's some descriptive stats from some well-known stocks that we all trade and then some indexes that we also trade. Now, these numbers are a couple of years old, but it's still going to make the point that I want to make and allow us to get to the conclusion that I want to get to. If you look at like an Apple and an IBM and you look at their average share volumes, even a couple of years ago, 26 million shares a day for Apple, 4 million shares a day for IBM, at the money open interest, you can see lots of contracts in Apple, 63,000, 26,000 for IBM. But then if you go down a little bit on the list here, you see the S&P 500 is multiples of even the big heavyweights in the marketplace. When you look at average share volume of Apple being 26 million, S&P 500 being 76 million, that multiple may have even expanded, you know, in recent, you know, months and quarters. And so when you start to think about, you know, where the activity lies, when you start to think about where the liquidity lies, you know, and we're not comparing SPY up against, you know, a Snowflake or, you know, some other company that's maybe not as liquid as a heavy. We're talking about Apple. Like we're talking about IBM. These are very, very liquid individual names. But when it comes to the activity in the marketplace, SPY is the king, right? SPY is the grand poobah of all underlyings that you can trade in the marketplace. So when we start to think about managing outlier risk, it's very important to understand, you know, this differential in terms of the activity that exists in an SPY and the activity that might exist in even some of the top individual names that attract a lot of activity and attention, like an Apple, like an IBM. So this is just kind of to lay the groundwork for the main point that I want to make here this morning. So John, go ahead and hit us here on the next slide. This is going to be the main slide. And this is it. Like the same stocks that we looked at on the previous slide. This is very simple. It's an extremely simple takeaway. And this is the number one thing that I suggest to people who are struggling to carve out some consistency in their trading, who email me or maybe meet me, you know, at a live event like Houston this weekend. I'm so excited to meet so many, you know, citizens inside of Tasty Nation. I'm excited to meet these individuals this weekend because we can't say the word that we used to say, so we have to call them something weird and clunky now. But this is the number one thing that I always recommend that they do.
You can say Tasty Traders.
Hey, maybe you can. I can't. I mean, you think the plebes and the pleasants can say that? No way.
Oh my God.
He's got a point.
Oh my
Citizens God. Inside of Tasty Nation, right? Oh the populace inside of a Tasty universe. So this is the number one thing that I recommend to people. Look at the average daily move. So look at the average daily move of an Apple and an IBM and then an SPY. So once again, we're talking about best of the best here. We're talking about, I mean, IBM especially. I mean, it's like, you know, this is your boomer stock. This is your Procter & Gamble. This is your stock that never moves. But even still, you look at an average daily move of IBM at, you know, a little over 0.5%, and then look at the average daily move of the SPY. Now, again, this is obviously going to be largely contingent upon volatility. Where's the VIX at? Hey, where's the VVIX at? Like all those things, right? But just, you know, kind of broad scope, this is always going to apply, just in that indexes are going to move a lot less on average than your individual names. And so I'll be curious to know how you guys, like when somebody reaches out to you and says, hey, I know you guys get this email all the time because I do. So you guys probably get it in some multiples of how I get it. People reach out to me and say, hey, Jim, I'm struggling to find consistency. I'm really excited about selling premium. I'm excited about waiting for high implied volatility. I'm doing all the things you guys suggest. I've been following it for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, whatever, but I'm having a hard time carving out some consistency. What I usually say is, hey, take a little bit of time, especially right now with volatility. I mean, the VIX is at 26 today, right? It's like, hey, take a little time, ease up on the individual stocks, and maybe just shift to ETFs for a little while. SPY, QQQ, TLT, GLT, IWM, right? I think it'll smooth things out for you while you start to find your way and get some confidence back. What do you guys think about that, A? And also, B, what do you guys say to people that reach out to you looking to manage outlier risk?
Well, I mean, we have two standard answers that I think we're never going to vary from because the research just is too strong. Obviously, the first is, I mean, you have to train people to stay small. It is against human instinct to stay small. We do everything big. We order extra size everything. I want everything big. That's just in our nature. And the second thing is, what Tony and I have learned over the last 10, 11 years is managing early really does reduce outlier risk. I mean, it's all there is to it. You know, like, it's not something that we used to think about as much, but it's something that we think about every single day now. We manage early, it reduces outlier risk. So when you stay small and you manage early, you're pretty much never in a situation where you're out of the game.
I gotta piggyback what Tom said. I gotta agree with them wholeheartedly. I mean, and even more about the managing early part of it, it allows you, at least in our world where we're trading a lot of options, it gives you options to do something, meaning it allows, you know, time has value, so it mitigates some of that move that you get. Now, you're always going to get that outlier move where a stock goes to zero overnight. You can't control that no matter what you did or any kind of strategy. Small being, hey, you know, you'll look back at it and go, yeah, I wasn't small enough, but I'm glad I was small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. Totally. I completely agree with both of those. And we talk about those on the network so many times. That to me was sort of given in terms of managing outlier risk. What do you guys think about this, though, as maybe a strong number three? Like, I mean, you got your Chris Sale on the top of the rotation. Then maybe you got like a Brian Baio getting pretty excited about him. He's sitting 96, 97 with that 87-mile-hour changeup. Looks the exact same halfway to the plate. You can't hit that. Nobody's going to hit that. So as a number three, that's kind of like your Rick Porcello. Like, I think this is solid. Like, do you think this is a good Nathan Eovaldi to shift from individuals to ETFs? You know, not a permanent thing necessarily, but just for some time. What do you think?
Kind of like your Rick Porcello, did you say? Kind of like your Chris Sale. I thought he retired.
No, man. He's our ace this year. Right, we should get him for about a game and a half or two games before, you know, breaks a femur or, you know, has a hangnail or whatever he has. But we should get him for a couple solid, you know, six inning outings. John knows all about that. Although John got him in his prime. John got him when he was just a workhorse. Now we get him when he's all old and decrepit. Yeah.
I remember him when he was a rookie and he first came up and, oh my God, was he good.
Man, he was dominant. But what do you guys think, in all seriousness, you guys think shifting to ETFs for some period of time, just while you get your bearings set, you think it's a viable strategy?
I think it's a third or fourth starter, maybe fifth.
Maybe fifth? Wow, so we went from Rick Porcello to Rich Hill real quick. Like, real quick. Like, we're talking Rich Hill now? Man, I don't know about Hill. That.
He can't still be playing.
Oh, no, Absolutely. He just signed like a 2-year deal with the Pirates.
He's 190.
Oh. Yeah, but man, he's still blowing people away with 88 mile an hour gas. Absolute gas.
I think he was on the Cubs in the 90s.
Yeah, I think he pitched with Maddox on the Cubs. I think it was Greg Maddox, Rich Hill. That was your 1-2 punch.
You are right. He's on Pittsburgh. I cannot believe it. He's 43 years old.
I was going to say, he's been around for 150 years. I think I saw him in 2000 on the Cubs or something.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. All right, so I think this is a strong number three. Tom calls it number five. Nevertheless,
I said it's a 3-5. I said it's your third to fifth starter.
That's a big difference, man. That's a huge difference.
Well, 1 and 2 are layups. Stay small.
Absolutely. Totally
stay
agree.
Small and manage early are layups. I mean, I do agree that if you like when we're cold or when we're in a little bit of a slump and we're like just not doing well with individual stocks, we will, increase the size of our positions in various various ETFs. No question about it.
There you go. Right. So, don't do what I say. Do what I think. There it is. All right. So let's get a few takeaways. Let's get them onto some market measures. I got to see if this insurance adjuster will ever call me back. One of the best ways that we can reduce the potential impact of an outlier move against us is always to control trade size on order entry. It's almost like I knew what you guys were going to say. But in addition to that, we could focus our energies on trading more indexes and fewer individual stocks. This will lead to more predictable results and smoother outcomes over time, not unlike the illustrious 27-year career of Rich Hill. I mean, at a certain point, he's going to have the all-time wins just because, just from a longevity. I mean, he's picking up 6 to 9 every year. It's like, give him another 10 or 15. He's going to be there.
10 or 15.
I'll tell you what, though, man. If you guys could indulge me for one extra second, I'm really excited about Brian Baio. I know you probably have not heard of him, but I really don't care because when you watch him pitch and put it up against like an old like wind-up or delivery of Pedro Martinez, they look almost the same. And you guys know, which I know we've talked about this before, Pedro Martinez is the reason I'm a Red Sox fan. And so now I've got Brian Baio. He's coming up. He's looking filthy. Filthy. Oh, it's nice, man.
Oh,
nice.
My. It's so funny to listen to you talk. You're such a rookie.
You like Houston in this basketball thing too, right? Like for the NCAA?
Houston?
Yeah.
For the March Madness?
For the win, yeah.
I don't even No, you're trying to set me up. All I know about is it's all about USA and Japan in this World Baseball Classic. That's what it's all about. We tried to talk about this before the show and y'all didn't care. That's all that matters right now. Forget about March Madness.
Got it. All right, we're gonna take a quick 90-second break. Good job out of you. Good luck with the water. We'll be back in 90 seconds. We got a market measure.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, or registered broker-dealer.